Okay, so now I'll continue. I'll talk a little bit more into the microphone because apparently it's a bit difficult to hear otherwise. So I'll try to concentrate. So now I want to say something about what is actually the more Jungian approach towards dreams. Many things I'll say now is based on Jungian psychology. I think, so I'll try to use some terms and say how I think one could include this. I think dreams, of course, are a very valuable resource, especially to get in contact with that what one considers soul. And it's important that when we talk about soul, we talk about an ambiguous term, a term which has many different meanings, which we can never really pin down exactly, which can't be defined, but which leaves and is open to mysterious thoughts, ideas, and insights. And I think that's actually the power of the term soul. So dreams are actually, we have to see in connection with soul. And the issue is actually, how do we keep in contact with that, what we call soul? How do we actually be, how are we still connected with that aspect of human beings? And I think, as Jung pointed out, that's actually one of the important qualities or issues of human beings. And the great danger is, as I tried to point out before, is that we get disconnected. The great danger is that we somehow get start taking over a restricted view, a view which empowers ourselves, makes ourselves more successful, but at the same time, less connected with ourselves. I think that's actually the dilemma we're in. So now, dreams, of course, they're always a remembrance of that as something else is going on. There is something, an autonomous process going on inside of ourselves. That is something which we'll never be able completely to grasp. Something which is here and might have certain significance, which might have a meaning which we might understand or might not understand. And in order to value dreams, we have to also value soul or value the notion that there is a soul. The danger now is when you start trying to understand dreams is that the term understanding might always also have some dangerous component in it. Because when you understand something, you actually then take it into reality. By understanding something, you somehow take off the mysterious aspect. Explanations are always also a way of reducing the complexity of something. You explained it, now it's clear, now you can put it away, you can put it into a box. So when you try to understand dreams, you have to watch out that understanding doesn't mean taking away the gist of the dream, doesn't mean taking away the specific quality the dreams have. So you should try to approach dreams, you try to get close and include them, but somehow you have to prevent understanding them. And I think there's a bit of the difficulty with Freud when psychoanalysis came in. Freud used specific terms and he actually had a great way, a great concept. But the problem was that then dreams suddenly got understood and said, well, this has a sexual meaning, this is a death wish which is here. So it was understood and did have some effect, of course, and had a valuable resource. But at the same time, it got more aloof. And there I think the Jungian approach is different. Jung, and this is something which a lot of non-Jungians especially don't really understand, Jung always said we have to remain, and Hillman also says that, we have to remain with the dream if we want to get the specific qualities of a dream. So we have to stay with the dream or stay with the image of the dream. Now, as I said, in-depth thinking also often happens in retrospect. After we think of it, this is the natural tendency. We understand family dynamics when things have gone. We understand what is going went on during childhood. After when we've grown up, that's I think a natural trait. Human beings we're always a bit late, but that's the way we function. And now, if we look at dreams, of course, there's a lot of dangers when we approach dreams. One danger is that we start making storylines and project the storyline which currently is prevailing inside of us into the dream. So it can happen that when we tell the dream to an analyst or to someone else or to ourselves, we immediately put it into a certain pattern and structure. So then we say, well, I had the dream where this, and then he did it. We start connecting the different images. Like the first dream, I said, I was at the job, and then people came in. Job, people came in to sort of seeing it like wagons, carriages in a train. We connect them to each other. Whereas probably, according to Jung, it's just images. The way the images are connected is open. But we tend to make a storyline, and maybe we tend also to think it the cause, causality, sort of viewing it with causality. Because this happens because I was in the office, all the people came in with different clothing. And because they were in the, I got them, they were there with different clothing, and because they were in different clothing, I got confused. And because I was confused, I had to make an assessment. So we see that one cause after the other, leading to the other cause. That's one danger that we project causality into dreams. Jung said it can be the other way around. The end could have been the goal. So the finality, actually. And so that, I think, was an ingenious approach. So maybe everything else, like the dream I said, the squirting of the water, splashing of the water in that bedroom, maybe that was the cause. And the people had to dress differently. The fat man had to come in so one was able to splash with water. So it's like a pre-rehearsal which leads to something. So you have to, when you look at dreams, don't just think in a causal, use a causal pattern. This leads to this, and then to this, and to this. Think also in finality. That's the goal, the end. Is this goal, and everything else is in preparation. You know, this is like when you do cooking. When you do cooking, of course, the end, the meal at the end is important. And you couldn't say, well, if you cook, I don't know, the cordon bleu, say, well, this happened by coincidence because somehow, you know, the potatoes were cut, and somehow, so, but actually the goal, actually the end, all the events before have a meaning because of a particular goal. And that's so that's a way of looking at dreams, and which we have to use. We can use a causal principle and think of it as a finality. I forget the right word in English. So these are the two basic different approaches, because we have to be aware, we have to stick with the dream and watch out that we don't start to use one kind of cognitive pattern or a template or a model which then immediately takes away the fuzziness of the dream, the ambiguous. You know, dreams are ambiguous because we put it then into particular. So it's finality, it's causality. We might look at dreams. But also we can look at dreams, you know, as from the, you might know this already, subjective and objective level. That's also a way we can play with dreams. You can, well, dreams as an inner drama. So all the figures inside which appear in the dream are we ourselves. So the fat man is also part of one's own personality. Other people are also part of myself. The objective level is that we look at the dreams. What does it say for the particular life we're in? A lot of dreams which we have of people close to us are actually dreams also probably about these people. So if we have a dream about a spouse or about a daughter or a son, it might say something about what is going on in a daughter or the son. So it might be on an objective level. So you have to, I remember having once a dream when I started actually working in Bern. And the first night when he came back to Zurich, I had a dream of a church. In Bern there's a Münster, a big church. And I was getting into the church, and then the government and the ministers were there, and they held a ceremony in the church. They were really nobly dressed, and so, and everybody was very dignified, because Bern being an having an aristocratic background compared to Zurich. And then I thought, oh, this is interesting. It looks very posh, very dignified. And then someone indicated a door at the side of the church and said, you have to go and enter that door. I went to the door, and there was a spiral staircase leading down. And then down there, was a big cellar, a gigantic cellar, and the whole cellar was full of shit. big pile of shit was there. I had this dream, and 2 months later, it was found out the whole government had to, the government had to resign because there was a tremendous corruption scandal in Bern, and the government resigned and it completely changed the whole political system, and so it was one of the biggest scandals. And so, you know, you might have a dream which takes up something you feel, you know, something which maybe is around, you might not consciously be aware of, but maybe somehow sense, perceive. I think that's what we all do. I don't think that's exceptional. That's what we all might do. We might sense something, especially when we get into a new area, especially when we get to a new to an area which we're not acquainted with. So such we get energized by something, and this might give us dreams, which might tell us something on an objective level, and not just on a subjective level. This is something we sometimes have difficulty in accepting, because, of course, we don't want to consider ourselves as sort of fortune tellers or whatever, you know, having all this. But I think it's something very banal. It's something very... So certain dreams can be interpreted on a subjective level. Others might have contents, might have messages on an objective level, on a general level. And depending on... how, you know, we can do both, because as I said, dreams are always ambiguous. It's always a recollection. We can do this or that. I think we can both approaches. But objective might be from the surrounding, because often we're just a function of our surrounding. We're actually, it's our ego who believes that we as individual are important. We are important, of course, for ourselves, but actually we're always part of a group, we're also part of the psyche of a particular group, so we might take up things and produce a dream, which is important. This concerns people we are related to, spouse, family, but also maybe a whole political system. So these three dreams I mentioned, you know, the second dream about this man outside living in the suburb, dreaming, so it might have a completely different meaning, not have a personal meaning. He, of course, was confused, said, why do I dream such a strange dream? But maybe it had a different meaning in a completely other realm. I don't know what the meaning is there. I couldn't talk to him, but maybe it had a completely different meaning, so which not a personal meaning. And this is something what Jung stressed. Dreams are not just personal. It's not just something biographical. It's not just something we can sort of pin down on our personal lives. Dreams might have another message, something. Might include something which is completely from another realm. It might even have something transcendental which indicates itself in the dream, something which is completely ununderstandable. And this is subjective, objective, that's also an important term. There's other terms which Jungian psychologists also coined. Of course, this term compensation, I have a bit difficulty with that idea, but you also said dreams might be, of course, a compensation. And I think if you think of that, what I said before, it can be maybe a compensation of because we overemphasize our ego or rational attitude. So if you overemphasize that, it compensates. It compensates usually, compensates when we sort of get infatuated, when we get maybe carried away. It might have like a correction. So it might be like an inner voice that said, okay, you're overdoing it now, and so on. So this is something which I experience too, when I do work a little bit too much, suddenly there's a lot of people. I had a dream some time ago, but there's a lot of people in my apartment, and a lot of chairs around, people moving, so I said, I don't get to have any space, so but this is a compensation, God indicating me, perhaps. So dream might have also a kind of therapeutic effect, you know. Some dreams might have the effect where we can see, okay, we have to correct something, maybe we have to do something a little bit different. Some dreams, so it's not just objective. No, this is, of course, subjective. Dreams might have a causal or a final, but there are other things. It's important to see that dreams, the messages of dreams have to remain unclear. So dreams is not something, Jung always said, you have to stick to the image. You have to think, what is actually How does it appear? So always try to recollect. Remember I told you about this photograph of the place in the town, the central. And of course I had the chance to have these photographs, but dreams are a bit similar. Look at, always try to remember, what's the image I really had? And the great danger is when we start thinking about dreams, is that one of the concepts moves in and we start to get into the sort of the pinning down, giving it a meaning, making sense of the dreams. So we actually also, always when you think of dreams, go back to the basic image, try to get impressed. And also try to find out what does the image do to us. Because it's important, dreams should not just be interpreted on the intellectual level, cognitive level, but if you want to actually appreciate dreams, we should look at all our reactions we've got, our afterthoughts, the body awareness, how we feel. So all these things are also very important. And these also these come up when we try to confront ourselves with the image, just try to look at it, be aware of it the way I said, we'll look at a photograph and in central. So we have to stick into the image, and the image has to be unclear. So in some ways, dreams shouldn't be understood. If someone understands a dream, maybe he's already away from a dream. But of course, he got something. He might have got some message. What is very important, though, and this is a second point, I think, which is important, is we, of course, need rituals for dreams. I think to dream, to work with dreams or to appreciate dreams, just by yourself, sort of privately, so is something which is often difficult, because you get too quickly, you start to cling in to everyday life activities, and this is something you have to be aware of. And Kay and I just exchanged before that we both do that in the morning. You do meditation, and I try to listen to classical music in the morning, and then the question is, you said, when do you do your prayers? And for me, the question is, when do I listen to the news and read the papers? And I realize when I listen to classical music, I'm in another realm, so I can drift off. This is important in the morning, half an hour. And then the moment comes when I listen to the news and read the papers, and then I get agitated. I get annoyed, and so then I'm sort of clung and tuned in again. So you need actually... You need a realm where you can approach another quality, and this needs rituals. By rituals, I mean it has to be a collective, stereotyped way of approaching this realm. I think it's too often difficult just to do it on your own. It might be possible, but often it's not easy. So it might even help if you have a ritual, a collective ritual. It's something which should be perhaps included into your life. Rituals, of course, if you look at Asclepius, you know, that was a ritual. They went to a specific place. So the ritual is, as you know, should be defined by a place, by a code of behavior, what you do, and by a way of approaching, of a way perhaps have a specific language. And how you do this ritual, of course, is something which depends on a culture you live in. Perhaps psychoanalysis often offered that particular ritual, and psychoanalysis was actually a place, analysis, where you could have a specific ritual, which you went into a room which had a sort of containment, and then you could sit there, talk face to face or lie there, and then you had a certain time which was defined. And I think that was actually Freud's achievement of trying to reintroduce that ritual into our society. A place where you can approach other realms. Sadly now that with psychotherapy, which has to be now evidence-based, clear results, and orientated towards symptoms, of course destroys this effort. You know, if you're orientated to symptoms and have to define the goal before, you lose the quality which I described before, which is important for dreams. So in psychoanalysis, actually this offered a containment, a realm, a ritual, where you could approach this other realm. You could approach soul. And so it was important that the psychoanalyst didn't have distinct answers, that it was maybe a bit unclear, that it was maybe even a bit drowsy. I just had a discussion with other colleagues about the importance to fall asleep during sessions, and I'm not advocating that, promoting that, but it might have a certain significance soon. You get into another realm, not so controlled anymore. So psychoanalysis had actually... This was actually a ritual where you could include them into your everyday life. Important, of course, is that you keep this attitude towards, and the attitude you have towards dreams is not as sort of control, but a playful attitude. Dreams should be something you play with. Dreams, by playing, I mean you go there, you approach it, and you leave it again, you circumvent it a little bit, you do this and that, you take different angles, but you don't go there and sort of try to say, okay, sort of be very controlled. The playful, aloof attitude should be important, and there, of course, it's important to all this amplification that you try to connect with other realms, you amplify it, say, well, where do I experience something similar? Danger always is with amplifications, that is suddenly with the result, with the interpretation, and you lose the contact with the image. And I said, the image, to stay to the image is very important, like with a photograph, always stay there and try to always come back to the image. And if you look at a lot of sessions or dream interpretations, they very quickly end up with the conclusions. You know, you might tell me a dream and then say, oh yeah, this is a typical dream which has to deal with your mother. So I think your mother had a very influential, so, and then one talks about the mother and not the dream anymore. So it's important when you talk about dreams, you say, okay, they might have to, so let's go back to the dream. So leave it open again, leave the question, give it, you know, sort of open it up and look at it as mysteriously. But what else has it to say? Where can I look? You know, like with a photograph, you look at different angles, different moments. We're trying to do this now we're just currently doing a program where we're trying to help people interpreting dreams, but we do it with a computer, because but we're trying to do this so where people can, which we can use them as in analysis, and you give in your dream, and then you categorize your dream. And now what we're just trying to do, we're developing with the school of, with an art school, we're trying then to develop images. So you have you have categories, for instance, what's the color of this particular dream you've got, put in the category. What's the topic of this dream? So what topic do you give? So you put in the topic. What persons? And you give all this in, and then afterwards we develop designs, and the designs then are shown on the computer, and then you can start interpreting the designs. And for us it's very dangerous, we have to watch out that we don't pin it down. So now we're working on designs which leave the mysterious quality, which sort of leave the people fantasizing and not pinning it down. So that's what we're currently trying to do, and maybe we'll succeed, I don't know. But we see that it might be a help, or might offer new rituals towards dream by having this, we call this program Dream Watch. So it's important that you circumvent it. It's important that also you have to see the purpose of dreams is actually to help us to imagine. And I think this is a very important term when we start thinking of dreams. We need to imagine. Imagine means that you think of other ways of doing things. Imagine means that you go beyond what you actually see. You imagine maybe something else might be happening. And dreams, they are a very valuable resource to imagine. So one way of dealing with dreams is you just take it as a baseline in order to start imagining, in order to start to fantasize. And so they said, oh, yeah, that what comes to my mind is this and that. So you move on and you dream on in a certain way in order to allow yourself a wider perspective. And this might then help you sort of connect with other sides. Also, what is important, I think, when you imagine, dreams have a lot, you can also try to find out what is the connection with your body, what is the connection with not just reality outside, but with the way you are. And so when you imagine, you might be able to take in your body too, your body experiences, and try to make some connection. So dreams, I think, are very important, and I think what our society needs, actually, is that we develop spaces, rituals, where we can somehow appreciate dreams, but not dreams in the sense of pinning it down, but dreams in the sense of leaving the mysterious quality, taking it as a chance to imagine something, as a opportunity, as a resource to look different angles, but not in the sense of giving it clear interpretations, which then have that particular meaning, but more as a resource, something which continuously goes with us, something that continuously is following us and actually helps us maybe to bring us away from this over-controlled attitude or brings us away from this idea, this fallacy, that we can control our personal life or control our professional life, but sees that there's other realms which might have a very important quality. So I actually think dream is the way to connect to soul. And in contrast to Freud said, well, dreams are more, the unconscious is actually the sort of, the unconscious, we've got the debris of our experiences, of biography, I would say. Dreams, or the unconscious, reveals also aspects, other qualities, which we haven't maybe detected yet. Qualities, maybe intuition, maybe being to sense more than we do. And this is all in, this is actually, which is might be implicating in the concept soul, things which we can't maybe reproduce, so we don't know if it's really true. And all these things are maybe being transmitted with dreams, so I think dreams should be more included. And my hope is, of course, maybe in society, as we will have a revival again of dreams, and it won't be just different. A revival in general, so Prince could include it. I would hope the Bundesrat and Switzerland would introduce dream interpreters again, or experts in dream, but I think it's quite far away from that. Okay, this is what I wanted to say, so I think now we have time for discussion. Oh, yes, yeah.
Because you feel like I can start something.
Yeah.
So, are you saying just let that kind of go too? Or?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that it should be considered a resource, and that shows the impact a dream can have. A dream can have what you're saying, you know. Suddenly you have a shift, say, and you look at something a bit differently. So actually it's soul which is telling, indicating something else. So that's actually exactly the quality a dream can have. It would be a mistake if you would, there's two things. You should allow yourself to be open for something like that. So it might come, it might not come. You might have a shift, you might not have a shift. And if you got it, you know, a new inspiration or a new idea, it's something, of course, you can keep. You shouldn't put away right away. But if you would stick to that, you know, if you would sort of close the dreams, and okay, now I understood this particular dream, so I can forget it. So if you would have a shift, it wouldn't mean that you start not reflecting on the same dream again. I think I think it's important that one said, okay, I had to shift, okay, but let's look at the dream again. Maybe it says something else also, you know. But it's something very important, this shift. And as you know, the shifts have to be mentally done and not, it has to be an insight if you want to move on.
you said in terms of this effort-based application, this coming down from practice, taking out thinking of imagination, creativity, etc., what can eventually program for PhD and master's students. And I've been looking through curricula, for example, well, what course should I take, etc., etc. There will do things that are not being offered, like creativity. If you want to be in business schools, because that's the quality that's needed. That's you, that's your personality. These are your solutions. And you just can't find anything in 50 courses, or lots of courses, you know, nothing on creativity, nothing on anything personal at all. It's all knowledge, 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 it's there, it's useless. It's interesting that, you know, you can confirm that, but there's just this something missing.
Yeah.
And this makes very boring people very bad.
The problem is it detaches yourself because you start believing in yourself. You start believing in your concepts. You start believing that you can really achieve this if you have this clear set goals. And then the danger, you oversee the major other aspects. So I think in the whole, another approach to in business and but in other areas of life is actually that you always approach an area, a challenge, but at the same time you have to have the notion, actually I don't know a lot. It's I'm trying. It's an attempt of solving something, but other aspects are unknown to me. And this idea of getting knowledge, pin down knowledge, I think it's as you said, it makes people completely boring. It's a lack of inspiration, imagination. But it's difficult. There are certain creativity courses are usually the most dull courses one can think of, because then creativity is not really controllable. So it's something which is outside, it's on the margins. That's where creativity comes. So if you make a creativity course, usually creativity disappears. Yeah.
I appreciate what you were saying about the subjective and the objective. I guess I have the understanding that, you know, every part of it, every, you know, object or every symbol, every person or a thing is a part of a part of you, and you're saying no. Do you suggest, you know, looking at it in that way as if it were, and then looking at the more objective approach? Or
what I suggest is that you circumvent dreams, you play around, and you take up different intellectual concepts when approaching a dream. So you can approach a dream by thinking, okay, let's look at it at the subjective level. Then you might have a shift, might have an idea, an insight, to say, okay, forget it. Now let's look at it at the objective level. And now let's look at, is there a certain gist, message? Or maybe it's just reflecting something I've done. So you have to play with the ideas and concepts, not have one clear way of dream interpreting the dream. I think that's important. And then it depends what kind of insight it gives you. It might give you no insight. You might look at it on a subjective level and it doesn't say anything. But then you look at it on an objective level, it tells you something. But it's not something which is clearly set. It's something more which has... It's more akin to inspiration, imagination, and less to understanding. So that's also what I forgot to remember. The dreams, of course, are symbols. You know, you have to look at it symbolically. And symbols are something which, as you might know, function, have the power in itself. So symbol can't be replaced through wording or phrasing or giving it an interpretation. So you look at it as a symbol and not just... transfer the symbol into a narrative, into an explanation, which then takes away the energy of symbols. And we tend actually to, we're very much influenced by symbols, I think, but we tend to put it into a narrative, to explain it. And words, or the language, is always a way of repressing insights. It's not just a way of opening it up. The same way, it's a way of closing. So when we talk about dreams too much, and then we actually destroy actually the original quality of the dream. Yeah.
So Helen, could you just say a little bit more about the, you talked about the ritual, the dreams need a ritual, like in the word, mm-hmm. looking at that.
Yes.
So it'd be like individual ritual or collective ritual. Could you just say a little bit more about that?
I think dreams, as I said, rituals and actually, if you define rituals, if you do something individually, it's more difficult to have a ritual. So the best would be if you have a ritual which is also collectively based. So it's not just you yourself who's doing it, but it's somehow a ritual which aligns yourself with maybe a group of people, with maybe an institution, so which works automatically. It's also important because then you can carry the content or the message to dream. Many dreams are confusing or overwhelming, like you've mentioned. You know, people often have overwhelming dreams, and dreams which they left aghast, and they left, say, wait, I can't deal with this. This is too much. So you need a containment of that, and it can't be just you yourself. So it can be actually a group of people where you do this. I think basically, you know, you should include it. My position is you should include the things a lot more into life. In my institute, we do this. We have a retreat every year, and in a retreat, we always share the dreams the next morning. So we arrive in one evening, and the next morning we share the dreams. And I have one colleague who even gives orders the night before. They say, well, tomorrow I want you to tell us a dream. We want you all to tell me a dream about animals. But interestingly enough, you know, usually a lot of people come up with animals, and I dreamt of an animal. I personally dreamt of a giraffe, you know, so sometimes I get, but I mean, that's also a ritual. So it's you need to include it more. But it can be done in family life. I think family life leaves a lot of free space, and you can, there actually is a space where you can do it, and a lot of families do that, you know, they share dreams, and so to talk about dreams. It can be a way also of when you have a general discussion. I think in analysis it's important that you also approach the way of dreams. I realize that when I work with people, it usually takes a while until they start appreciating their dreams. When I ask them, well, do you have any dreams? No, I never dream. Is there any dream you would remember? No. And so then I ask again. And then usually after 3 or 4 sessions, well, by the way, I had a dream. And so that's where then they start tuning into that area. And so that's important. But there might be other rituals, I don't know, other ones which can be developed.
When you were talking about the storyline, that being a danger, I'm not sure I quite understood it. So I have my conscious awareness of my life, so I try to fit the dream into that, is that?
When we talk, I know there's been in linguistics, there's a lot of research being made on that. When we talk and relate anything, we immediately put it in a certain structure. We sort of say, this is me having done this, and then this happens. So we have a basic story, and this varies also from culture to culture. For instance, in Japan, they have another way of structuring things they remember than with us. That's why Japanese novelists often, if you real Japanese, not Murakami is considered not Japanese because he translated too many in English books, and now starts using Western narratives according to a lot of Japanese people. But if you look at, for instance, the Japanese way of narrating, that the ego is not is hardly mentioned. And then actually you have when you read it from our perspective, nothing happens. You know, to just go there and say nothing's really going on. It seems like a bit boring. You know, and this is something I experienced also doing mythodrama in Japan. But here, you know, in Europe, and that's it, we have a different narrative, a different way. I think, I thought it's interesting when I did mythodrama in the various countries, how presenting the same story, and they had to invent an end to that particular story, the narratives in the different cultures had different structures. So in the United States, for instance, there was a lot more drama, you know, so there was a necessity to give drama, action, things happening, and to sort of seeing what the result is. Here in Switzerland, there's less drama, so it's a bit more structured, and in Japan, often nothing, it's the story just continues. So there's nothing actually happens. I can give you an example. I once made a mythodrama on a story where a man and a woman, the story was, they selected the story, a Japanese story, a man and a woman walk past the field, and then a raven comes, sits on the shoulder of the woman, and they both go into a hut. That was the story, basically. It was a bit longer, of course. And then we told the story, and I was still sensei and had to interpret the end of the story, and which is, of course, similar to dream interpretation. And then the first group came, and they had prepared 3 hours. They prepared their end of the stories for 3 hours, discussing it, deciding on an end which they could all agree to. So it took a long time, a long reflection. They practiced their end, which they rehearsed. So they practiced separately in a room. And then after 3 hours, they presented their end, and I was the one who had to interpret it. And then the first group came, and the first group, the place started, at the end of the story, you saw a man and a woman walking past the field, a raven comes, sits on the shoulder, and then both, the couple, disappeared in a hut. That's the end of the story. That's their end, which they invented. I was a bit flabbergasted. I said, well, you didn't do anything with that story. There's nothing new. How can I interpret this? You know, this is just, because that's the story. You just repeated the story. That was my idea. So first I thought, well, that's that particular group. You know, maybe they didn't have a lot of ideas. Then the second group came, and then they also proudly sort of presented their story, and they started, you know, started playing it, and then these are a man and a woman walking down a field. Then a raven came, sat on the shoulder, and the couple disappeared in a hut. Identical. Nothing. And so, and the third group, the same. They just played the identical, and I had the impression, they're just repeating the story. I mean, what's going on? And I was a bit sort of embarrassed, because they kept telling me, interpretation. And I said, what kind of trouble is that? But then the interpreter, someone who did interpretation, she said, sort of the translator, she told me, you should understand, the first story, the first group, a man went into the house first, and woman followed afterwards. And the raven was on the right shoulder, not on the left. And then in the second group, the man was a bit in front of the woman, so it was very slight, small changes. And that's what I mean by storyline. So the way we reflect something depends a lot on what structure, what storyline we have in our heads. And this varies from culture to culture. So if we reflect on anything from the past, if we reflect on holidays, for instance, if we usually follow a certain structure, a certain way of presenting it. Also we might say, well, I don't know, we might, for instance, in Switzerland, when people reflect on holidays, they often focus on what deficiencies they experienced, what catastrophes. Well, I was in Cairo at the airport, we were there for 5 hours, and so that's a focus. So that is the storyline of the Swiss, always have something a bit, a catastrophe included somewhere, you know, which they overcome. So that's a typical storyline. And as I told you, dreams are something we always recollect afterwards. We can't collect them at the moment. So the storylines, so what we do with it, are also significant. We have to just reflect on that. Yeah?
Culturally speaking, do you know the difference of the Japanese groups you're describing? The second group said that the raven was on one shoulder,
yeah,
versus the other. Is that significant?
Yes, that was significant to them, yes. Yeah, for their culture, it was very significant. It had a meaning, but I just couldn't. I didn't know the meaning. But they had a tradition of somehow changing. If they would talk about something, they would change slight, small things. And to say, well, we'll go to Kyoto on the temple. And I visited, first I visited this temple, and then I visited this temple, and said, okay, well, this is now. But then, if you know it, it has a significance that they first met the temple of the Nijing area, which is a specific area where everything changed, and then afterwards the temple of the emperor. So there was a message in it, you know, which you couldn't detect if you don't know the culture. Yeah.
I'm curious about the computerized project.
Yeah.
Looking for symbols using color.
Yeah.
Because I'm embarrassed to say, I often feel like I can't see a symbol or an image. I don't know how to pull it into a specific ethereal kind of thing. I don't know what that means exactly.
Yeah.
So the computerized thing, oh, maybe that would have got to find my image.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know what that is if I'm not using my own, if I don't have a correct meaning for the word. Or image, or how to bring my own unconscious into something that I could put somewhere or see.
Yeah, I think there's two. Yes, that makes sense. There's two things one has to say. One is, what is the theoretical approach? And if you look at the theory of dreams, we have to say dreams are symbols. We can never really understand them. They're images which always change. So that's actually the approach we have to have. So the theoretical approach we have to have. Again. But then the question is, how do we work with dreams? And if we work with dreams, we have to look at this as a resource for inspiration, for playfulness, for doing this and that. And there's many ways of working with dreams, because they might give us a shift or an insight or an inspiration if we try to work with them. You know, this irritation we've got. We could dance, perhaps. We could dance out a dream. We could make a drawing, you know, we could do that. Or what we're trying to do is now having this program which categorizes the dream according to certain terms. And the terms are defined by the analyst together with the dreamer. So you would first have a certain session, say, what are the important issues? And it might be a person, it might be a profession or whatever, it might be a country. So you find these issues, and then you have maybe 6-7 categories or maybe more. And then with these categories, then images are created. So you could, for instance, say, what's the connection between the color of the dream you gave and the persons? And where do the persons appear, and what's the relation? This is something you might see after you've put in a number of dreams, maybe 20, 30 dreams. Suddenly you see certain patterns of something which repeats. So you see that, for instance, let's say it's a money complex. The money complex is always combined with family, maybe. You know, they come together. And you see, so we're trying now to mix images, and the images we're using, you know, these pictures which you can see then on the computer, we're using it as a resource for further reflection.
So does it end up being a picture?
Or yes, a picture.
Color, yeah. A picture of something that is recognizable?
A picture which can then inspire for other thoughts. And the difficulty we had now, because I have someone who does the programming, but he understands it very well, is we don't want to have statistics, you know, these histograms or things like that, like we have, and statistics. Statisticians said, well, we can do a sort of tell how what the significance is, or how many times this occurs. We want to make it a bit fuzzy. And this is what the challenge we've got at the moment. So we have at the end an image, which then can leave the question open, which is there for further reflection. But I think we're doing it in program, because thanks to, you know, you can do a lot with this programming. This is currently what we're developing. It's called Dream Watch, which we then hope to have finished by fall. Because we have to include, you know, new tendencies, new technologies, you know, it's included, and people don't draw that much. So the idea is that they then can look at these images and say, well, this is interesting, and then they get other ideas. Maybe we could have a moment of drowsiness now. And
In a way, as you're talking, I'm thinking that dreams are, in a way, like for exactly what they say, like in a fundamental way.
Yeah.
Or it can grow as you grow. It can keep going back to that scripture verse. You can keep entering and you can become one of the people in scripture.
Yeah.
You can be the observers of the
scene.
But each time you go back, it is the living word because you enter it in a different place.
Yeah.
But you can always enter it just flat and
exactly.
It went here, she went there, it's happening, and. So, I mean, to me it's almost like it could be almost a lectio divina.
Yeah.
Each time the scripture in a sacred way just becomes a coach without knowing where am I going to go with it.
Yeah.
But then it has that sacred written word element to it.
I think it's a very nice way of saying it, putting it, I think, the way you formulated it, I think. You encapsulated what I was trying to say. Yeah.
And as well as the one just to help onto that living word, I also think that being caught by an image in a museum or a gallery and wanting to revisit that in some kind of certain experience is a very interesting process too. And it resembles to me sometimes looking at the image because you go back and new thoughts can come up. There could be a new relationship formed or something else. And that can be true with traditional art or more modern, which of course more modern allows for huge amounts of imagination, but so does traditional. And I find that that's sometimes a wonderful kind of exercise in the whole inner skills of looking at dreams, just comparing it or finding something that particularly calls to you in a photograph.
Mm-hmm.
I like reading my dream journals, and you were talking about the retrospective part, and reading a dream or looking at an image in a dream and going, oh, that's what that was.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's interesting that usually just after you had a dream, you don't understand it. But afterwards, when you look back after a while, suddenly other insights come, other conclusions.
Even years later on,
suddenly, oh, I see. And so it shows that you might jump to a conclusion very quickly. So dreams, as you said, you should process, you grow with a dream. As the dream changes, you change. So that's actually the process, how we should approach dreams. Not pin them down. Yeah.
Now, with the people that you're working with in Asia now, the children,
yeah.
Are they just children or are they adults also?
No, they're adults also. Yeah.
They're adults also. Do you work with dreams in the approach that you're using now? Or is that totally different?
Yes, what we do usually with mythodrama, we sometimes start with dreams.
Oh.
Yeah, but it depends how prepared the people are. Because not always they're prepared, as I said, to really recollect the dreams. So you need some kind of like introduction. But when you have a sense, that people are open to that and say, okay, start off with a dream. And sort of thinking of a dream, you've got a typical dream. And so that's in order to bring them into that realm. Into that attitude, that's what it sometimes do.
So it really is like a step that can move them into the mythodrama?
Yes, and next week we'll do 2-day mythodramas in Taiwan. And then we do it the first day, we do sort of storytelling, and they're introduced to different patterns of the story. And then at the end of the first day, they're actually left we ask them to reflect on what kind of dream they've got and then include the dream in the ending, and that's sometimes very interesting. So we start off with a story and then they have to fantasize the end, but then say we do it at the end of the day and say, okay, now do something else, go and eat, drink, or whatever, but try to memorize or try to give your the dreams and focus on the dreams. Maybe you have a dream which tells us something. That sometimes initiates an unconscious process. So often people come with new insights. We did that once in Salzburg with men group, also 2 days. And then we said at the end, okay, you don't have to tell each other the end of the story. There we did it that way, that we said, story ends here, and now you don't talk about the story with each other. So what do you do now? You do something else. You should not talk about the story anymore, but maybe you'll make up an end during the night. And in the morning, when you join in again, you exchange the ends according also to what you dreamt. And there half of the people dreamt something. And they could, so we could include the dreams in the ending. But what it needed before the story in order to get them into another realm, to a more playful attitude. That's a difficult question. Do I think any pattern? I don't think.
Any societal message?
At the moment, I see a lot of fear in dreams. People tell me a lot at this particular moment. So there's less grandiose dreams, you know. So there's more more privatized dreams. You know, that's what I see. People fear a lot at the moment. But a distinct pattern, I couldn't say.
That's interesting. The emergence of the fear is being a primary aspect. And that's kind of across the board, because you look at a lot of different
The one who shot her?
We talked about wakeful dreaming. I don't know the whole story. I just remember hearing that and thought, oh no. I didn't hear that because how dreams are so health given to most people. I present fear to the rest of the country about dreaming, but you did mention wakeful dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're saying, you have no collective to bring it to.
Oh, but the dreams can be problematic too. I mean, dreams are not as such all healthy, and sort of it can be a dream like that. Dreams bring in something else, and here he brought in the idea of shooting someone. You know,
so if he had a group, that might have stopped.
Maybe, yes.
But that was the problem. He didn't have any group.
He didn't have any group, and he took it too concretely.
Yeah.
You know, so if you take something like I said with the sexual scene. It shouldn't be taken completely. If he were to go to the new job and potentially have sex with, that would be a misunderstanding. No, so he would have to take it symbolically. And he probably didn't have a container. Containment. There was no containment for.
I just got his name, Jared Lofton.
Yeah.
What is daydreaming?
That's actually. Basically, it's a bit the same, you know, daydreaming. It means it's also tuning into what images we've got, fantasies we've got, daydreaming. So daydreams are also important. And that's a discussion in education. I think daydreaming during lessons is important. And I read once an article that the best ideas, pupils, students have the best ideas during boring lectures when they stare out of the window, because then they start imagining, daydreaming. That's an important aspect in school and education. But nowadays you want to keep them constantly busy, you know, doing this and that and that, and so this aspect is gets forgotten.
Okay.
Thank you for attention.
Last.
What? Oh, yeah. I thought it give something about it. Did you enrich the spirit?
I'm sorry?
Did you make a copy and enrich the spirit?
Well, you type it?
No.
Make a CD.
CD?
Yeah.
Could I have the CD?
Sure.
Yeah.